Greetings and salutations, all you pet heads out there, and welcome to the smooth sounds of On Rock, a Petrospective. I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
And if you're wondering what's going on, because this sounds different and not the usual norm at all, that's because you've tuned into a quote-unquote very special episode of On Rock, the Petrospective. Isn't that right, Dave Hall? You know what, Dave? Nah, I'm done with this. I'm sorry. I'm not going to put anyone through this anymore. If you haven't stopped listening after all of that, you're a good sport.
We love you, listeners. We love you so much, listeners,
and we won't.
We hope you still love us.
Well, you know, one way or another, anyone who's journeyed with us this far, Dave, and who is sticking with us for this episode, I'd say that love's got to be at a pretty reasonable level.
That's right. That's right. I think everyone was anticipating this one's going to be a bit of a tough episode to get through, and we'll see how we do. But we really appreciate all of you listeners. We've appreciated all the feedback that you give, the support that's been coming through. We really value it. It's great to know that this little project of ours has certainly been well received by a lot of people out there in the world, a lot of Petra fans, and we really do appreciate that. And look, you know, it's going to be a very interesting episode, this one, because of any album, of any episode that we've done, of any album of Petra, this album is probably one that many Petra fans truly, truly struggle with.
So you called it in our last episode when you declared God Fixation to be possibly the most divisive Petra album out there. And I think the feedback that we received, I don't know if this is your reflection, but I think supports that, because we seem to get split right down the middle. There were people who were saying this is the worst Petra album of all of them. And that's fair enough. We're not ragging anybody's opinion on that. We got other people who were saying, this is my favorite Petra album. And there are a handful of people talking about how God Fixation was their entree into their fandom for the band. So it was a polarizing album, but it still had its fans and its defenders. I will be so curious to see if anyone wants to step up and say, Double Take is the album for me. I will engage with these people on a genuine and a heartfelt level, Dave, because I want to know what's happening in their heads to make
Double Take was the album that made me a Petra fan. Now that one I would be very interested to hear.
I'd just about pay money to someone who could genuinely tell me their story if that's the case. So
And please, if there are listeners out there that is the case, we would love to hear from you, because as someone who had been a Petra fan for many years, I can tell you now, this album nearly tipped me right out. Like, this was for me the hardest album to listen to on this journey that we've done. But on top of that, it was an album that I hadn't listened to a lot over the years, because I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it when it came out. And so it's always been a tough album to get through. So, you know, if there are people out there who have a different opinion, it would be good to hear from them, because there are a lot of Petra fans who struggle with this. It was a tough time for Petra. It was Double Take. This time period was quite tough, because this album did not get well received by Petra fans. When I looked through, the Petra Forum, the Petra Zone has got a list of concert dates for all the various concerts. The Double Take tour is the smallest tour of any Petra album since Never Say Die came out. So there wasn't the demand to see them live in concert perform this album. So it really had a massive hit on on the way the band were viewed. And we'll get into this more in the next album. I think it nearly put an end to the ministry for a while. I think it really pushed to the point that maybe this ministry wasn't going to continue.
I could certainly understand the key figures in the band asking some serious questions in the wake of this album. We reflected last time one of John Schlitt's quotes about God fixation had been how Petra wasn't selling anymore and they weren't attracting crowds, and God fixation was an effort to re-engage a younger audience and bring in some new listeners, some new album sales, some new ticket sales. I don't know that it was as successful at that as they might have hoped the experiment being. On the whole, I think you and I reflected that regardless of whether you could say it was successful or not, God Fixation was a worthy experiment.
Yes, very much.
Now, what's fascinating is that what's quite common, and you see this in every form of art, from musicians to filmmakers to, restaurateurs and chefs. You have an experiment that doesn't go the way, something that's new and pushing in a different direction, and it doesn't go the way you think. One of the immediate reactions is to retreat to the thing that's familiar, that you were famous for, that did you well in the past. And on one level, you could suggest that that's exactly what Petra set out to do. They said, let's go and revisit the hits. Let's go back to some of the classics that we're really well known for. Who was it in that room, I wonder, who said, let's do cover versions of our own songs, man? Not something that many bands really, really end up doing. I don't know whether you've got an equivalent in the States, but in Australia, for a long time on the radio, we had a particular program where the radio host would invite musos into the studio with him, famous musos, and he would assign them a song from a different band. Often he would purposely choose a band that was a wildly different style to them, and he would request that they come up with an acoustic cover version to be played there live on the air. That's since rolled into its own almost entire radio program devoted to it. And it's very, very popular, and we love it. And you get some glorious, glorious covers. You get some stinkers, but usually when you get the stinkers, everyone's having a little bit of a joke. And even the guys playing it know this is terrible, but we're all having fun. This album is like that, only without the element of winking at the audience and we're having a bit of fun. I think these are covers that, whether you can say they work or not, they're all very, very earnest in their intent.
Yeah, look, they are. It's interesting. When you look at sort of what they were setting out to do, John Schlitt is quoted as saying that the purpose of the album wasn't to compete with what they'd done previously, but was to reintroduce to a generation that maybe hadn't heard those songs before, and that these songs were designed to be done on the radio. So they went in with an intention to do something that was creatively different for songs that they had previously recorded. Now, this, I think there's a few things that tie into all that as well, because tied in with that is the fact that this is the last album of their record contract with Word. They've been with Word for a few years now, a few albums, but this was the last album of the contract, and sales have been declining. They were having to look at what to do. When we interviewed Bob spoke about how there had been talk of maybe doing another live album, but they didn't go in that direction for whatever reason. and I think costing was part of it, they went in this direction. And it's very unique, because it's so stylistically different from anything Petra have ever done. I mean, we've done a journey from the beginning, from back in 1972, 73, with a very late 60s, early 70s sound. Come and join us. You got that. Petra, Washers Wider Than was very different to what they'd done, but it was still very reminiscent of stuff you got back then. Then you moved really into that rock and hard rock era, and we'd sort of seen a couple of stylistic changes over the last couple of albums, but nothing as drastically different as what they've put together for Double Take. And I wonder, again, how much a role these newer band members that were a part of the group, guys like Pete Auder and Lonnie Chapin, who had been so heavily involved in the writing of the music and the production of the last album, God Fixation, I wonder how much of an impact, what role they may have played in sort of, let's try this and let's give it a go, and let's, you know, in terms of the style of what they were putting out there. I wonder if they had a significant role to play in the development of that that picture that they were putting together for this Double Take album.
It's a good question. It's a good question. I think I get the feeling that Double Take in part represents a band that's kind of reckoning with their own legacy. The selection of songs they do, certainly among them, are some of the all-time classic Petra songs. So they weren't, I don't think it was just personal favorites or anything like that. It was very much, you know, it's a give the people what they want kind of approach. It's, if we were just to make a best of album, I'd contend
most of these songs should show up. Most of these songs were concert classics. They were done regularly from right up until Farewell. That many of these songs are on Farewell.
Yep, absolutely. But you know, with that legacy that has stretched over so many years, it's interesting to see the way that it reflects in differently, or is reflected back differently by the people who are influenced. And I'm pretty sure it was actually prior to this album. Hang a sec, let me just make sure I'm going to get that right. Yep, quite a bit prior to that album, to this album actually. But we got a glimpse of that legacy being played out amongst the bands, or some of the bands who had been influenced, in the quote unquote tribute album, Never Say Dinosaur, which is its own very unique kind of animal as an album, I'll say. But I found it a fascinating case study in the last few weeks, listening to these two albums kind of side by side or in contrast with one another.
Just in case you are a big Petra fan who are going, what are you talking about? There was an album released by, was it by Star Song?
Was by Star Song in 1996.
Yeah, released by Star Song in 1996, which is a tribute album to the legacy of Petra. It was entitled Never Say Dinosaur, and it was a variety of different Christian bands and artists from that time who did a cover of various Petra songs, but in the style of that band. And some examples of bands that perform, we've got, you know, bands like Audio Adrenaline, MXPX, Jars of Clay, even Kevin Max Smith, famous from DC Talk, makes an appearance doing something on this album. So yeah, they took these songs and they did it in their style of song, their style of music. In other words, what would Petra sound like if it was done in a heavy metal style? What would Petra sound like if it was done in that style? Yeah, their unique style brought in an interesting picture. And so that's what the Never Say Dinosaur album is. And if you haven't heard it, I really encourage you, go out. If you're a Petra fan, go out. You wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you weren't a Petra fan. If you're a Petra fan, go out and listen to it if you haven't, because it is an interesting comparison to what we're talking about tonight, because it's bringing a different feel and a different approach to songs that we know and love.
That's absolutely right. We're going to keep focused at the beginning up front on Double Take. Leading out of God Fixation, Dave, how's our lineup looking heading into this era of Double Take?
Well, the revolving chairs continues moving into Double Take. Kevin Brando has moved on. I have no idea why. Maybe the band felt that using two guitarists may not have been the way to go. Maybe didn't quite work. I don't know. And so we've seen Kevin Brando leave. And joining the band is a new keyboard player, a guy by the name of Trent Thomason. And this is his only appearance with the band. But having said that, and we'll get more into this next episode, it's his only appearance. It's also the last time we're gonna see Pete Auder and Lonnie Chapin as a part of this band lineup. So, we've got another a member change, but there's still a lot of the core there. We've still got John Schlitt. We've still got Louis Weaver, and involved in the production, we still have John and Dino Elefante, and obviously Bob Hartman, executive producer. So we've still got a core that have been around the band for a very long time, and bring elements to the band that do help with the production side of things.
Now I'm curious as to, across the, there are multiple session musicians that were brought in as well to help out. You always wonder kind of what's, whether they're getting to bring stuff to the table or whether they're really just there to fill out the sound and do as they're asked. You got a list of producers and engineers as long as my arm for this as well. And you're kind of wondering, are they bringing anything to the mix? There's this sense of, for the first time, I think Petra have sailed this rock journey, like the differing tastes and waves and crests of rock throughout the decades. And it's landed something here that I think is kind of Southern in its style. I hope I'm right about it. It's what I imagine Southern to be anyway, as much as I can being an Australian. But it's not terribly far removed from, the sound of Third Day. And that's kind of what I make my basis there. I think Third Day, I think Southern rock. Is that right? I don't know.
That's what I understand that to be the case. Yeah.
And that's what it feels in terms of like landing on a consistent sound for the album. That's where they're at here. And so that's that question. Do you think that was dictated by the desire to be played on the radio? Was that the dominating sound of the time?
I think this album certainly feels like they were trying to create some songs that could get regular airplay, because, mainstream radio channels, and whether it be in Australia, in America, whatever, they have certain styles of music that they like, and the hard rock style that Petra had become synonymous with is not one of those styles that gets regular airplay. Mine, and in fact, when you look at the history of the band, the songs that have predominantly got a lot of radio airplay have been their ballads. Their more mellow songs are the ones that get that prominent airplay time. So it may very well have also been a intentional stylistic change to create a bit of more radio play, which in essence is an effort to create a wider audience, because when you are getting regular radio time, you are connecting with people who might not have heard your band before, heard of Petra, heard their style, heard their music before. And so an effort to bring in a new audience, a wider audience, which I think is again a little bit of a reflection of, like we commented last time, John Schlitt saying they weren't, the album sales had decreased, the concert tickets were not selling as much, so they'd seen a reduction in demand. And so in an effort to create a wider audience, is I hope that you'll pick that demand up, more record sales, more people maybe want to come and see you, and so that has a benefit for the band on a wider scale.
Yeah, it's weird. Like this whole season, the last couple of albums, and including this one, feels just like this nonstop era of transition. Like the band is trying to go somewhere or move to somewhere, and just unable to settle.
And it has been a journey since Bob stopped touring. When Bob made that conscious effort to stop touring and step aside from that role, I mean, we even noted that No Doubt was the first album that, I mean, he played the album but wasn't going to be touring, but there was definitely a movement there, a beginning of that journey and shift as they sought that sound out. And it's been much more prominent since guys like Pete Auder and Lonnie Chapin joined.
That's right. Somewhat appropriate that the cover of this album is what I imagine to be a train station in motion. Do I have that right?
It certainly looks like it with the album title, that double take title, looking like a train sign, like the station name on the wall.
Was this just a transitionary period? Is that all they ever had in mind? I couldn't say honestly, but it's an interesting part of the journey. I will say that.
Well, with it being the last album of a record contract, with no guarantees that there was going to be another record deal with any label anywhere after this, it may have been an attempt to bring that journey somewhere where they could hopefully potentially continue to tour with this sound. Not sure.
It's an interesting thought. There is a well-storied tradition of bands reinventing their sounds throughout the years, reinventing their personas, their image, in order to stay fresh. The classic example being U2. Whether you enjoy their music or not, like there was this run of them continually adapting and changing to stay fresh, and gave them longevity. On the other hand, the Rolling Stones never stopped touring and they've never created anything new. They've always just been exactly what they were from the very beginning, and that's the end of the story. So, it's as an industry, as a business, there doesn't seem to be any real rhyme or reason. But before we dive into the songs themselves, Dave, what do you think the cover mentions much commentary?
Look, it's not a bad, it's actually not a bad cover. This idea of the moving train at the or just the station image. It's not a bad approach. It's actually probably a little bit of a pickup from, you had that theme in the last hour where they seem to be on a bus or something like that, and here, that the journey continues. It's certainly not the worst album cover in my opinion. In fact, the album cover is not a bad concept in itself. And that idea of the double take, getting on the train and having another look, or going on a new journey, it certainly fits with what they're trying to do with this album and the concept of it.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you on all those points there. I'd certainly
So,
see it above, Petra Praise 2 album cover.
oh, look, I think, when you compare, I think it's a little bit more featured than perhaps even No Doubt, and then I guess you can talk about how Captured in Time and Space is that we've had that conversation before. I think it would probably sit up there. I think it's when you get into the conversations are where you're starting to get into some of the unique concepts like the Beat the System concept and the Wake Up Call concept with the world or the television screens. I mean, where do you feel it fits compared to those?
Wake Up Call, I could probably agonize over for a little while. Beat the System, probably. I find that cover very affecting. Like it's.
I think there's something. I think that there is a creative element to this. It feels like they've given this a bit of effort, and I do feel that that train station concept with the album, with the sign being the band, the album title, I think that creates a really unique feel to it, and it feels in motion. It feels like we're trying to move. I think it fits image, and I'd actually like to suggest that maybe it does sit above Wake Up Call.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't. I don't find that I particularly want to argue with you about that.
So a little bit of love right
I
here at the
think,
start for Double Take.
yeah, you know, I'd agree. I'm, yeah, I consider it above Wake Up Call. Again, just because Wake Up Call I found to be such bad Photoshop,
Yes,
but.
and I think that's part of the point. This doesn't have that. This is even like the sign itself would be a Photoshop concept, but it doesn't look bad. It looks well put together.
That's a fair point. So, Double Take, we're not totally dismissive. Off to a good start, I think, Dave. That's nice. Now let's actually put the album on. Click. Gosh, what are we listening to? This is Judas Kiss.
Well, you know what? For a first up choice, for a first up song, it has a good feel. The use of the harmonica, the acoustic guitar, really sort of driving this song. It's upbeat. It has some key elements to it. Nothing is overpowering in a way. This is actually not a bad start to the album. I think that this song brings a different feel. It's right there from the beginning. You don't have the classic Judas Kiss riff, but I think the use of the harmonica at least creates a little bit of variation, a little bit of something that adds to what they're trying to do. And it's not a bad rendition. It feels different, but it's not too in your face.
I agree. A big reflection that I found across the album this time around that really interested me was that having made the decision that they want to present these songs differently, reimagine them a little bit, they still hold very slavishly to rhythm and modality, and particularly in the words, the lyric rhythm.
And the melody.
And the melody. So this is the interesting thing, that in rhythmically, the lyrics are almost across the board identical. And all that's changing is, you know, to be simplistic about it, if the original, the lyric goes up in the melody, in this cover, John goes down in the melody, and vice versa. He just makes some, it almost sounds like you're listening to just an acoustic arrangement of the actual song until John just starts randomly going in a different direction with the melody, even though the rhythm and cadence of the words is still familiar. Now, in Judas Kiss, in this cover of Judas Kiss, it is one of the ones that works pretty well.
The only drawback I had from this version of the song was there didn't really feel a great deal of difference between the verse and the chorus, the way they were being played. One of the things, obviously, that's very common in most music, and certainly Petra have made history of, is the verse and the chorus. You could normally tell, even not so much the style of the song, but certainly there's elements of the song that change to show you that we're at that point, we're at that key moment of the song, the chorus. We want to impact it. We want it to make a hit. We want you to really feel that bit. It doesn't seem to have that. They bring in the keyboards a little bit in the chorus, but outside of that, the acoustic guitar seems to be
something.
I'll pick it up and try again. There's no real difference between the style. The acoustic guitar just seems to keep playing the same rhythm and the same pattern as it's moving through. The drums keep the same time. There's no variation there. The bass, what's happening with the bass is doing the same thing. It's only the introduction of the keyboards that indicate that there's anything different between this part of the song and what was being played before. So that's probably the only drawback, the only negative I felt about this version of Judas Kiss. It just doesn't have that variation chorus to verse. But outside of that, I actually didn't mind it. I didn't mind this one. So there we go. A little bit more love for Double Take.
A little bit. Let's switch gears very minorly for a second, Dave. And let me ask you about a little band called the Walter Eugenes. Now, Dave, had you at the time that you got Never Say Dinosaur even heard of the Walter Eugenes down here in Australia? No.
Never heard of them.
Have you in the years since listening to Never Say Dinosaur ever picked up an album or heard a single from the Walter Eugenes?
No, never.
So
never
we once. need to be clear with people here. We can't make any comparison to the rest of this band's discography. We are only commenting on them in comparison to Petra's original. But the Walter Eugenes were the band on Never Say Dinosaur that covered Judas Kiss. Interestingly, this time around listening to it, there's a hint, I found a hint of Southern rock, certainly country, a bit of country tinged rock to the sound, what they brought to Judas Kiss. Very hard edged for it though.
Yes, very hard edged.
Very hard edged. And not necessarily inappropriately, but an almost sinister tone, like their rearrangement. And, you know, these guys changed tempo and cadence and rhythm for their reimagining of the song. And it takes on a very sinister tone from the beginning. Taking it just as it comes on this particular tribute album, what do you think of the Walter Eugenes Judas Kiss?
Again, it's not a bad thing. I've never heard the band. I'd never heard them before. I don't know what style of music they normally create, but it certainly drives a lot quicker. Moves the song through a lot faster. But the variation they bring to it, they've got variations in the song itself. They've got almost like light and dark tones. You use the term sort of sinister. So there's a bit of a dark tone at times, and then you know, certainly the introduction and coming out of the choruses, but then it picks up, like the chorus has a bit of a lighter feel to it. It's certainly brighter as they bring their full instrumentation into it. So it's not a bad cover at all.
No, I'd agree with that. I can, you know, the sort of the their song break, their bridge section, where the guy starts launching into his falsetto cries. That felt a bit much to me, but I don't want to rain on their parade too much.
No, and again, they're doing something that's them. But I certainly must admit the vocal variations that John Schlitt was trying on the double take version, I did prefer that to the vocal variations that were on the Never Say Dinosaur version.
So, opening up the field there, any of your Walter Eugene fans, weigh in. Let us know where this cover stands in the list of the work that those guys ever did. We're going to roll on in double take, David. And let's talk about the coloring song.
Do we have to?
Okay. All right.
So, I want to start here because if you go back and you listen to our podcast of Never Say Die, I made it no secret back then. The style of the song, I felt it was the wrong place on the album, and I didn't think it was the right way to do it. I've made it no, you know, I'm not sure about this one either. It has a little bit of a more moderate feel to it, but I don't like what John does vocally in this song. The vocal changes, I really struggle with them.
It's particularly, so they have this weird certainly I think the brown is the color verse. They modulate to a minor key in a really, really obvious way that brings the whole song. And the song hadn't been upbeat or uplifting even to this point, but it really brings it down. Really brings it dirgy, I felt almost. Like this it was a drag.
Yeah, it certainly, I noted that it does seem to be slowed down. It does seem to be a bit slower than where it should. It does seem to drag a little bit. I'll throw a little bit of love to it. I do like the vocal layering that happens in the chorus. John's vocals get layered in that chorus, and I like that. And I like the production element that they brought in there. It's something that we'd heard in a couple of recent albums. And I really do like it. It does add something to it. But overall, again, there's no real distinction here through the song. And even more than that, there's not a great distinction in the style of the acoustic guitar playing from the first song to this song. It almost feels like Pete Ordaz sat in the guitar in the studio and just kept playing. And just changed the chords he was playing, and then they just started singing a new song.
I totally get that. It lends the album a wonderful inner consistency. For whatever good that is worth, but you know, it does have that real sense of sameness as you roll along. But here's the real question for you, Dave. Which is the worst version of the coloring song, this one or Capril and My Sister's Garden from Never Say Dinosaur?
All right. For anyone who's, if you've never listened to Never Say Dinosaur and you are going to go listen to, which I encourage you to do it, don't listen to the coloring song on that boot.
Skip track 11.
It is quite possibly the not just the worst rendition of a Petra song I've ever heard. It is going to be the worst rendition of any song I've ever heard, ever in the history of anything, just about. It is an absolute abomination of they've torn this song to shreds. Now, when I hear this song, I'm going to draw something here. I don't think anyone would even know about this. When I was in high school, when I was in year 11 and 12, in my last years of high school, in our English course, we had to do a study of a book called Wuthering Heights. Apparently a classic book. I hated it, couldn't stand it, never finished reading it. But out there, our English teacher introduced us to the fact that someone had recorded a song called Wuthering Heights about the book. And it is a horrible folksy, Scottish folksy song that is just terrible. This song reminds me of that song. That's how bad it is. It's got this folksy feel to it. It's got this, it sounds like you're out in the Highlands with a singer, a female singer city falsetto is what it sounds like. That's how bad it is. It is, I would not go near this song ever again. If I never have to listen to that version ever again, my life would be better for it.
This is one of those rare occasions when we are borderline abusive on Rock A Petrospective. We wish to pray for forgiveness from God up front and ask for everybody's grace. I have no idea about Capril and My Sister's Garden either. One of the realities of this album was that a lot of the bands and artists involved I was completely ignorant of. This is one of them. I had no great inclination to chase after any of that other stuff, but it was, my feel was that it almost felt like an intentionally doing a bad job, playing up an element of what made the song what it was to the extent that it became unbearable. And in this case, it was the sense of there is a childlikeness, a childlike simplicity and elegance and cuteness to the original lyrics and the original song. I understand that. And this one is like, well, what if we were just on a children's television program?
The Wiggles would do a better version of this.
I'd listen to the Wiggles do a Petra. Are you kidding me, man? I'd listen to the Wiggles do a Petra cover in a heartbeat. coloring song, you know, they, you know, have to rewrite it for, you know, their very specific colors, but
purple is the color of the robe he wore.
Well, oh, hey.
On the back that was torn. Oh, the whip that was
born
with thorn, born. I don't know.
we're not lyricists, guys, but that was a pretty good effort, Dave. I got to say. Anybody who wants to see David complete those lyrics, write into us, and I'll make him finish it, and he can read it out in our next episode. All right, so proving that this whole exercise in double take isn't just going to be about revisiting classic Petra in quotes. We are getting songs from well into John Schlitt's tenure in the band, well after the style of the band, like, had adapted and, you know, to his voice, and they had become that one entity. Dance. You couldn't get more in the depth of that era of John Schlitt than Dance. Do you think they made the right call in their arrangement of this version of Dance?
This version sounds so strange. It's they slowed it down so much you can't dance to it anymore. it's not bad, but it sounds weird. Slowed down as much of it as it has been.
The end of each line, each phrase that he sings is the end of the song Computer Brains. You know, it sounds like the tape should be winding down. You know, dance with a few, but I've been better off on me. And this is a case where, on the one hand, yeah, it is easy to rethink and reimagine and find a new melody, or you know, a new feel for songs. But sometimes that actually, because of the content of the lyrics themselves, that actually really throws off everything about the song, because you're marrying an upbeat, inspiring thing that was meant to be about getting you on your feet and getting you involved in something. And this just kind of makes me want to slump in my chair.
Yeah, the guitar playing, it's very intentional. It's got that an intentional feel and beat to the way he's playing the guitar, that it feels like that style of song, the what they tried to do with the style should have been put to a different song. It might have worked with different lyrics for a different song choice, but I don't feel it works for dance, because, like you said, it feels like you're slumping. It feels like you've hit this speed bump and you can't get over it.
Yeah. It's an odd one. And yeah, I don't know that I'm ever going to arrive at anything much more than it was an odd one for dance. Buoyed, though, to a certain extent by their choice of the fourth track, which is, you know, all right, arguably visiting the highest of the heights that the band ever achieved. The title, the number one in the band's history. You know, I think there's an argument could be made for that. I think this ain't bad. To step out of making just comparison, straight up comparison for a moment, this isn't bad. This has got a sweet and you know, kind of inspiring feel to it.
This is the first song on the album that feels different to what they've done for the like I said it before, you know, we sort of move from one song into another and things are sounding the same. Every song sounds the same. This version of Beyond Belief feels different. Yes, the acoustic guitar's in there playing along, but the keys are much more prominent in the intro, and the bass really drives hard in this song. It really has a very featured role, and that role, while not overly complex in what Lonnie Chapin is playing, it really brings that layered element to the tone and the style of the music that has been missing from the previous few three songs, and it creates a feel that works. It does sound so different from the iconic Beyond Belief sound, but they've kept the pace of the lyrics just without the drive of the previous version. And that's why it doesn't feel that bad. This song allows each of the musicians to shine a little bit, which hadn't really been happening to now.
Yeah. I also, the particular thing that I like about this arrangement, there's a modulated chord sequence in the chorus of this one. When they get to the refrain, beyond belief, they have that brief modulation to a minor chord back into the major chord for the chorus. It actually lends a really nice crunch to the chorus. there's something wondrous and dreamlike about this arrangement of Beyond Belief. And if Beyond Belief was you standing on a mountaintop, this is at the very least a really nice scenic train journey through the hills.
That's a nice image. Yeah.
So, now we get now to the first. I guess this is really where the interesting point of contrast comes in on this album. So we get to the first of the two original songs on the album. This is The Longing by Joel Hanson and Tony Wood. So I don't know the background to getting this sort of song into the lineup for this album. I'm not 100% sure where the music's coming from for this one. So was this the group jamming with some lyrics that they had, or did the original lyric writers come with a melody?
I think it comes from the writers.
Okay. I think in that regard, that's very telling, because I think the longing sounds odd in the context of this album. This is the song that sounds like it's a different band coming in and inserting a song into this album. Not a bad song. Let me be clear on that up front. I don't think it's a bad song, but it does sound odd. It sounds very different.
It does sound different. There's a few different elements to it. Musically, like the keyboards are doing some nice stuff. Again, it's acoustic guitar driven. It's acoustic guitar led, but the keyboards are doing some nice stuff. But what I really like in this song is when you listen carefully, Louis it sounds like he's playing like a bongo or some form of hand drum. You know, it's not sticks and snares. And that brings a very different feel to a song when you do that. So that element, I think it sounds really nice. And I think here the words of this song bring a depth. This idea, everyone has a longing. Everyone's on a search. Everyone's on a journey. But only few find God, we're all on that journey, and that really, I think it really brings some depth. We'll get into this later. I actually prefer this of the two original songs. I actually prefer this one, and we'll talk about that more. Not too far away. It's a nice song. It's not a standout song. But if this album, if this album wasn't so acoustic guitar driven, this song would sound, I think, would really stick out as a really good song. If it was on a different Petra album, like on a rock Petra album that we've grown accustomed to, I think this song we'd be sitting here going, my goodness, this is different, and this brings elements that we're not used to hearing, and it really sounds good. The problem is it's on an album where it sounds like everything else that's come before. Yeah, it
in its arrangement they've certainly got the same feel. I've always felt like this almost feels like something, you know, that Stephen Curtis Chapman would be doing, or one of those peers of in contemporary Christian music. I always felt this one was the one that made me kind of pulled me the most out of the journey of the album.
It's hard to when you're on a journey of refreshing. We're refreshing these songs. We're bringing something new and renewing them in a way, bringing something original does sort of really stand out in a big way. And really, it does take you out of that, what we're trying to do and what we're trying to put together. It does take you out of that trip.
So tell me, Dave, we roll into He Came, He Saw, He Conquered. Are you on board with this rendition of the song?
You know what? I don't mind it so much.
Really?
I didn't mind it too much. It's got a different feel, but without losing the impact of the lyrics. Like you can't slow this down. This is a song you can't do to this what you did earlier to Dance. It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's a bit different at the start, but it's not a bad feel. This brings in some underlying elements. It sounds like there's a little bit of electric guitar going in underneath. The keys are there. There's a bit of distinction. There's some, I guess what I like about it is there's some distinction in this song. There's some distinctive elements that aren't the acoustic guitar playing every part of every element of the song.
I appreciate that. I guess I'm kind of caught up in the whole, what I can't get away from is the feeling that in terms of the rearranging the melody of the song, it really does. This is the one more than any other that really just feels like John was saying, you know, what did I do the first time I went up? This time I'm going to go down. You know, what did I do this time? I stayed on one level. This time I'm going to kind of go all over the place. It doesn't feel like a really well thought out melody. It feels like I'm just trying to do things that were different to what the original time when we recorded it.
That's probably a fair point. And I guess when we've had a few songs that we're getting a different feel, but they've kept a lot of the lyrical style and the lyrical elements to it. When you get something that is so drastically different, it does stand out in that way.
But if you want something that's going to hold up almost identical to, you know, the original version of the song, it's hard to beat the system on this album. And I gotta say, from the first stirrings of it, this is kind of my jam. If you're gonna do this kind of arrangement, this kind of a you know, an ensemble around doing covers of these songs, I love the sort of, you know, bit bluegrass, you know, guitar, acoustic guitar intro. It's just the riff. This is the only song on this album where they're just like, let's just do the riff. Let's not change too much. Just do the riff. And they do it.
It was nice to hear the elements that you know and love from songs.
Hmm.
It was nice to hear that come through. And I didn't mind that they lost the echo in the pre-chorus, the rise up bit. I quite like that they dumped the echo to that.
I don't know. This is the one thing in this song that I don't like is what John chooses to do instead of the melody of, you know, rise up. His up and down is just kind of a random mess. I feel
you're,
like
you're not getting the unnecessary echo though. At least they're not echoing the whole line. Rise up. Wiser.
Like, well, that's true. Yeah.
Dragged it out forever.
You know, but still, like, it's the one thing in this song that doesn't quite ride. But apart from that, I do love that we've just got a solid acoustic, semi-orchestral rendition of a classic Petra song. Pretty straightforwardly delivered, but it works. I think it works.
It's okay. I do feel it drags a little bit at times. It doesn't quite have the same tempo. It is slowed down a little bit, and it made me think that it's hard to beat something when you can't catch it. So, you know, I might have liked it just a little bit quicker than what it was. But outside of the tempo, yeah, it's not too bad.
All right, well, then talking about slowing things down some days, and even shifting tempo and mood and feel. So, Dave, what's your take on the double take, "This Means War"?
Oh, where do we start with that? Look, it's... I've got a friend who put it really, really well. He actually listens to the podcast. I'm going to give him a shout out. Phil Cairns, you are a legend. Thank you so much for the encouragement that you've given me in this journey, and that you've been listening along. But we were talking about this this version a little while ago, because it's not only on this album, it's also the version they use on the 40th anniversary compilation album that's out. So they use this version, and he said to me, this song sounds like, sorry, the original version of "This Means War" sounds like guys marching off to battle ready for war. The version on double take sounds like guys who've been involved in war for 5-6 years. They're battle weary, they're worn down, they just want it to be done and over. That's the feeling that seems to come across with this version. This is an interesting way of performing this song, because it's got a nice sound and feel to it, but the feeling of the music doesn't match the lyrics and the message that are being put out, in my opinion. This song is a declaration of war. The lyrics are a declaration of war. It is a declaration of war against the enemy. We're taking a stand. You can't take a stand when it feels like you can't beat an egg. It's very hard to beat the enemy when you can't beat an egg. That's the feeling that this song really puts out there. I just don't feel that the lyrics to the song match. And that, to me, makes it hard to really get into this version of the song. If this music was done with another song, with lyrics from a different song, or this style was used on a different song from Petra's history, I think it would work really well. Unfortunately, this was not the right choice of song.
I think you just about summed that up perfectly, Dave. I've read something long ago with a very similar sentiment to what your friend Phil has said, but... I agree that fundamentally, I feel it's quite, easy to sum up this particular cover on this album, and that is that the tone of the song doesn't match the message of the song. So again, it becomes that odd, almost that odd kind of thing where it feels like they're just making choices that are they're just different from what they did before. They're just different from the original version of the song, because that's something. And it makes me question, like, what was the real process of arriving at particularly this arrangement. And look, hey, you know, we sat them down. They might be like, well, actually, we had a really big process and really intentionally we got to this. You don't know. But it's indicative of a really odd kind of thing. I mean, I put it at the beginning of this episode, I put it that this is Petra being their own cover band. But this is where that kind of feels, it actually feels like, yeah, this is a completely different band. And if it wasn't John's voice and his recognizable timbre, I'd never connect this with Petra. So this one probably this is the standout of this album, but
yeah,
for all the wrong reasons, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think this song stands out more than any other. I think, you know, when you look at what's being done, in the end, like I was saying before, the message of the song, I always feel music is a combination of the sound that you're hearing and the message of the song, especially in Christian music, Christian rock. It's the message and the sound need to blend together. And when they don't, it creates a disconnect inside, at least inside my mind. And that's what this one does. We've been talking about songs off the Never Say Dinosaur album, and while this song wasn't covered on that album, I think an interesting comparison is the last song on Never Say Dinosaur is a cover of All the King's Horses from the This Man's War album.
Yeah.
And that is a very slowed down version of that song. If the Never Say Dinosaur version is significantly slowed down, it's got a different feel to it. There's still a bit of power underneath it, but a different feel.
Oh, I agree.
But to me, it fits the message.
Yes.
Because the message is about declaring the return and the honor and the glory of the king. All the kings, God is going to come back. God in his glory and splendor will return. That message doesn't need to be upbeat, but by slowing it down, it puts some more emphasis on the return. He's coming. It's almost like that way. He's coming. He's coming. Oh my goodness. He's coming. Right. The This Means War version, like, here he comes. He's coming. Yeah. All the king's horses and all the king's gaming again. They're going to put this world back together again. And the Never Say Dinosaur version puts emphasis and meaning into it. It lets you think and dwell on it for a minute. All the king's horses, he's going to put this world back together again. It hits you by slowing it down. This Means War doesn't.
No, I agree. On that note, the Galactic Cowboys cover, though, is that also, as a comparison to this, an indication of perhaps the pitfalls of going acoustic as Petra did here? Because the Galactic Cowboys, they're rocking the full band in their cover. They've slowed it down, but you've got cymbal crashes. You've got distorted. You've got punchy instrumentals, whereas you've got the stripped back. You've got the string section and the acoustic guitars doing it in This Man's War.
And that could be the thing, because I wonder if we'd be having this conversation about the feel and the lyrics if what they did is do power chord electric guitar, sort of big bashing, sort of toms and cymbals. It might have that different, you could slow it down and still keep the impact of the declaration of war. That's a really good consideration. I think that's a really good way of thinking about it.
Cool. Well, taking a complete U-turn now in the feel of this album, This is the weird thing that sometimes pops up in albums that you listen to. My high school music teacher was part of a folk band who did an album of Irish folk songs. I still have it, and it's really great. But there was always this really weird thing in amongst those folk songs, which I was really getting into, were these two contemporary jazz pieces that just stood out like a sore thumb painted red and shoved in your eyeball. And I went to question him about it. It's like, what's the deal with these two songs? Because they were both like hardcore feminist anthems. Not that I have an issue with feminism, but this was really in your face and on the nose. And he was just like, I needed a female voice to come and record the album. And we found someone. And then when she got into the studio, she would only record our songs if she got to record her two songs. So they're there and we're stuck with it. And that might be the most horrible way of leading into talking about Breathe In. But it feels like a thing where Pete Orr's like, all right, guys, we're doing my song now, right? Mine now, yeah? This is where we get to do my song? Yeah, can we do mine? Yeah.
And it's not just doing Pete Orr's song. Pete Orr's singing it.
He's singing it. Now,
he takes the lead vocals on it.
He does. He doesn't have a bad voice.
No, he doesn't. No. But there's a distinctive difference here. It's all of a sudden you. No matter what happens, Petra, the by this point in time in the discography, John Schlitt's voice is Petra.
Mm.
You hear John. I mean, to this day, I hear a John Schlitt solo song, I still think Petra straight up because he's so. Yeah. You listen to The Union of Sinners and Saints. I hear John Schlitt's voice come out, and the first thing that comes in my head is Petra.
Is Petra, yeah.
because he is now he is synonymous, his voice is synonymous with Petra. So to hear a song in this time frame that's not sung by John Schlitt really stands out and really makes you think, what's going on here?
To use the movie metaphor, it's the moment that takes you out of the album. It makes you stop. If you were just kind of cruising along, listening and enjoying the journey of the album, or at least engaged with the journey of the album, this is the moment where you stop just being engaged and you start going, oh, I'm listening to something weird now. I wonder what the decision was to put this song here in this spot in this way. This really, really goes into talking about like the importance of the placement of a song in the playlist of an album. That's not an art anymore because every song is released as a single. There are no albums anymore. But back at this point, they still were. But this is, if Pete Orr had done a solo album of songs that sounded like this, I would dig this so much. This song is kind of my jam. But placed here amongst these songs, it just sounds odd.
So I want to look at this in two different ways because on its own, this song is actually a really good song. It's lyrically quite strong. The call and the cry out to God to breathe his spirit into us and to fill our life with him and his breath being within us is a great, there's some great lyrics in this song. The feel is quite good. They've picked the feel up a little bit with this song. The use of the acoustic, there's some little bits of variation in there. Some nice backing by John Schlitt. It adds some nice depth in the chorus when he sings it. So this song, if this song had got released, like you said, if this was a Pete Orr song, you'd be sitting there going, my goodness, this is really good. The production qualities are fantastic.
Yep.
It is a good song. My one little criticism is that the speed of the lyrics is at times can be a little bit difficult to understand what Pete is singing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that is probably more to do with the fact that he's not a polished lead vocalist at this point of his career. I'm not saying that he hasn't gone on and can't do it. I'm saying that at this point, he was the guitarist for Petra and did backing vocals on a nightly basis for probably, at this point, 3 or 4 years. That had been what he'd been doing for 3 or 4 years. So he was not a polished lead vocalist, and it came out a little bit in this song. That's let's assess the song on its own. But if we assess it in light of the Petra situation, it is. It sounds odd. It sounds misplaced. It sounds... I really would have been... If this song had been sung by John, I wonder if we'd be sitting here going, my goodness, this was a brutal, maybe a brutal breath of fresh air into the album. It might have come possibly across a little bit different.
It might have. This is a song where I always found the slightly breathless quality of the singing fits really, really well with the song. And the harmonies in the chorus, I adore. I'm like, this is how you do harmonies in a song. It's great. But
which I think is a credit to John and probably absolutely Lonnie Chapin. I would assume Lonnie or maybe Johnny Elefante are doing some backing vocals in there as well.
All of them. I mean, it's a chorus.
Credit to the way they've constructed the song. Like I said, the production of this song is fantastic.
I have to confess, back in the day when I had this album and I would listen to it, this is the song that I don't know if everybody does this, but I'd hit the repeat button. I'd just hold on repeat for this song and listen to it like a few times in a row before carrying on. When I'm driving around in the car, like it really hit it. I memorized it. I really dug it. I always wanted this to be a song that I could like perform. I never really did. It hasn't really had that staying power. It's not a song for the ages for me, as it turns out. But hey, it's a nice piece. It's just out of place.
Yeah.
In this album.
And unfortunately, due to the style of the whole album, it just feels like another. It's just more of the same. We've just got more of the same.
Yep. More of the same. Now that we're carrying that sentiment forward into the next song, of course, but I would like to ask you this, Jay, because I've reflected and I wonder. I put forward the argument that Creed, again, falling into that thing of like, I'm choosing different melody leaps just because they're different to our original version. However, this Creed starts ostensibly exactly the same as the original recording Creed, a kind of melancholic, very reflective, mysterious kind of tone and mode. And the only difference between the two is get to the end of that first section into the pre-chorus on Beyond Belief. Louis kicks in with the drums, boom, we're off and we're going, we're doing rock. And in this one, they're like, no, let's just keep going with that intro. The whole song is just an extension of how the song was originally, introed.
Got it, yeah. But unfortunately, then it starts to feel like it's dragging. I agree. It does have that. It does have that start. You go, oh, yeah, here we go. And then it never picks up. And it just feels like it drags a little bit. And
this is where that really gets that almost dirgy kind of feel, particularly because the chorus, that first line, that, this is my creed, the wind is it kind of sounds like they're slurring. I'm sorry, that was maybe a bit over the top, but it's this thing of like, we're just sliding down this really lame slippery dip for kids. And it's, it just leaks any impact out of the message of the song, out of the lyrical component.
Yeah. It just doesn't, feel it has the heart depth that the Beyond Belief version had. Like, it's coming from the depths of the heart. It feels like it's coming from a creative person's fingertips, as opposed to the heart of a believer, is the sort of feel this one comes about.
So a comparison that I like to make, you can always tell the difference, particularly you go, so I was in an Anglican church for a while. In America, I think you refer to these as Episcopalian. Bible readings is a really important, scheduled, rostered, regimented part of an Anglican church service. You have particular readings every Sunday that are assigned and you know, you get, there's a Old Testament reading, a New Testament reading, a gospel reading. And you always tell the difference between the two types of people reading. There are people who get up and they are brought to life by scripture. And when they read it with passion and fervor and energy and drive and excitement. And then there are the people for whom it's a chore. And when they read it, you sit there wishing that you could, you know, drive something into your ears to stop just the boredom that drips through. And it feels like that's going on here. Creed, in the Beyond Belief album, they're speaking the Creed, the Apostles' Creed. It's built on the Apostles' Creed, and Beyond Belief album is bringing these guys to life. It is my creed. It's almost like they're shouting it.
And it's sung with fervor and gusto. It's, yeah, I really believe this.
I really believe this. Whereas this version, it's almost like they're going, and I guess I believe this, don't I, too?
It's almost like the repetition of, you get that sense of maybe like the historical churches. I like what you see in movies and TV shows with the sort of the, they going through the motions. They're going through the motions. We've done it. Here we go again. We need to. It's almost like when you say your prayers at night. You know, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. You know, if I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Dear God, please look after mum and dad and my brother and my sister. And yeah, you know, it just becomes a rote thing that you just rattle off.
Yeah, and there's
without little, any feeling, any meaning to it.
Yeah, little meaning or passion behind it. Yeah. And that's, I think that's the most unfortunate thing you could say. Really.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel, this version of Creed just doesn't work for me. No. Unfortunately. I would love it to, but it just doesn't. But however, having talked about praying.
Yes.
This song works.
This slaps so hard. I love it. This I argue should, this could replace the wake up call version of praying.
No, nearly. We'll get into the negative in a minute, but pray, we're talking about praying, man. This is the difference. This is the variation. This is the, my goodness, they've brought something to the table that works. It's not just an acoustic guitar. The harmonica just, it really adds a little bit. The drums that are going there, the bass is working a little bit. This one really sort of keeps it going and really brings some distinctive difference and some distinctive musical elements that haven't been evident in some of these earlier songs.
Well, it's this sudden in, like, look, it's a very clear, I think more like this song, they picked a genre. They actually, this song, we're doing a country rock song now. We're embracing the Nashville-ness of Petra, and we're doing a country rock song, slide guitar, harmonicas, the lot of it. And, you know, you need that pump when you get to that chorus. It's that pumping chorus where, you know, that everyone's going to get on their feet and start waving their hands in the air or something. It's, and I think that's just a really solid decision that led to, I'm curious as to what came first in that regard, where they're like, could we try to make this a country rock song, or whether it was just fiddling around in the thing and they just stumble across this version. I don't know, but this one works.
I love the harmonica, and I love the harmonica. So, in fact, we get a true instrumental in this song, which is
Yes,
something that's been
that's
lacking
right.
in just about every song, has been an instrumental or a solo. We get a harmonica solo, and it works. Sounds
okay.
I don't know. I have no idea who was playing the harmonica. I haven't really gone into the depths of the album cover to work out who played the harmonica on this album, but my goodness, it really brought some real life to this song. I do have a drawback for this song, though.
What's that?
I don't like that they've left half the lines out of both the verse and the chorus. I really, that the missing lyrics have an impact, because the song is the song, the lyrics tell a story. They tell a journey, you know. Noah saw the coming of the flood. He built an ark upon dry land. That's the message. When Moses prayed, it parted the Red Sea. In faith, he made his stand. Like there's two parts to the line, but in this song, we just get the Noah saw the coming of the flood. Moses, you know, when Moses prayed, it parted the Red Sea. We're sort of getting half the story, because the story is about things change when people pray. That's the message of the song. Without the lyrics, the message of the song is missing, because what, you know, Noah saw the coming of the flood. Well, how does that make him a praying man? Right? That it doesn't, you know, with, you know, David brought a giant to his knees. Yeah, because he was empowered by a stronger hand is the rest of the line. So to me, by withdrawing that second part of the line to the song, it actually takes away the message of the song. So I would have loved if they kept it in, and I would have been talking about a near perfection. I think if they'd left that the line of the lyric in, I think I'd be looking at this as nearly perfect.
My only rebuttal of your point, which overall I get and is valid, is to say we do at least lose what I think is the lamest of those chorus lines, which is Jesus turned the water into wine. No trick, no magician. I'm not sad to see that one go, but
maybe that's where it came from. We don't want that line in there. Well, let's take the rest of them out. But
yeah, I mean,
I just feel it misses. It just loses some of the power of the message of the song. That's
and all. I totally get that. But yeah, and you know, I don't know. A bit more time, they might have figured it out. Maybe they were just feeling that that kind of aspect of how they had, you know, done harmonies and arranged that for the original recording. They're like, there's no way to do that call and response thing in this style that we want to do. So let's just drop it.
And quite possibly that's the rationale. I just, like I said, I just feel it loses meaning.
But we come to the end now, and intriguingly, I find this really interesting. I'm not surprised that if they're doing kind of something that's, we want a sampler of our greatest hits and we want to reimagine them and rework them, I guess I'm not surprised that Just Reach Out would make the grade, because I think John Schlick particularly really, really has a soft spot for that song.
Yes.
I don't think what they do with it is particularly anything. I mean, they're trying to maintain that the feel of the, you know, of Just Reach Out as it was in the original album. They're not trying to mess with that at all. They're just doing it different genre, different orchestration. I don't think it works.
The line that I wrote in my notes for this song, it's a little bit quicker than the original, has a little bit of variance through the song, and when I variance in terms of adding, trying to add a few little extra, not just acoustic, but a little bit of extra bits going in and out, but nothing really stands out in this song. It's really just feels like it's a little bit quicker. And not driving as much.
It's definitely not driving. You know, there's that element of, I mean, Just Reach Out is a gospel song. It's got real gospel stylings behind it, you know, and it's got that sort of soaring chorus, where again, this has that, what they're doing here on Double Take is that element of we're making minor transitions with everything. So everything is kind of tiptoeing into that, you know, melancholy or angst ridden kind of feel. And it's like, it's interesting that you're making those choices for this, you know, particularly for one that, you know, was so meaningful to John and, you know, but I guess, you know, he's made clear how collaborative he was willing to be with the band that he had, whoever he was working with each time. Yeah, he's made very clear that he's always very open to their input. So, so, but again, this possibly just, yeah.
But I think in the end, this sort of sums up this whole journey that we've been on. I mean, at the end of this album, I look at this album and I just go, it really, there is just not a lot of variation from a song to song. It's just, it feels the same from beginning to end. The only thing that seems to sound different in each song is maybe just exactly how the guitar is being strummed.
Mm.
You know, it's the musicianship is solid, but nothing stands out. I think the lack of instrumental bits or solos of any kind, whether it be vocal, keyboard, the lack of solo elements, whether it be a vocal solo, whether it be a guitar solo, a keyboard solo. We did get the harmonica solo in one song, but the lack of that standout element really makes the album just sound the same from beginning to end. It really sounds like, honestly, it could almost be a John Schlitt solo tribute album to his time with the band. It really has that sort of just lack of distinction that I think that's where this album sort of just doesn't quite hit the mark. The musicianship itself is solid, but nothing stands out. I mean, it feels like it could have been performed or played by anyone, including me. And I'm not the world's greatest guitarist. But there doesn't seem to be any real variation, any real demonstrated advanced technical prowess done in almost every song. It's just a progression of one same sound after another. And it ends up leaving you with a bleh taste to it.
It's a background filler album. Yeah, you put it on and you don't listen to it. You know, having said that, like, oddly, I played this constantly for about 6 months when I got it. This was in my car all the time. It's an odd little effect, and this is, I guess, my personal reflection on the album and the impact of the album. This falls into, the same kind of nostalgia trap that I experience with things like The Muppets, where I have incredibly fond memories from very, very young days of enjoying Petra albums and just the whole experience of experience, you know, of listening to and enjoying a new Petra album or revisiting these albums. And then there comes a long gap where it feels like I'm not as engaged with them for a time, but I'm still holding on to the memory of them being so special. And then a new thing comes out and I so desperately want it to to make me feel like those things did. I want to go back to feeling like the way I did when I was a kid and I was hearing them for the first time. And I tried to just force myself to like this. I was like, I am committed to making this happen. I'm going to embrace it and get into it because it's Petra and I love it. But here's kind of the philosophical question. If I love the Rolling Stones, greatest, you know, their most epic stuff, and they were to come out and do something today, the chances are that I could really, really engage with it. And, you know, a lot of it would be this sense of like, yes, I'm back in that familiar rhythm with these guys, and they're old as heck now, but they're still playing, and that's a laugh, and we're all having a great time. But when you have bands that have a huge longevity and have multiple changes in their roster over the years, there is still usually at least one person. Most often there's like the real core driving part of the band is one person who really everything about the band's sound and their style is actually entirely this one person who is just constantly gathering new folk around him and who are happy to be along for the ride for a while. Now you have that in Petra for the longest time. It's Bob. And absolutely. He's the consistency. He's the through thread that holds the sound and the vibe and the feel of Petra together. No matter who came and went, there was something that was a connective tissue through all the albums, and it was enjoyable. And it was, you know, carrying a fire for the ministry in this band. Once you take that out, and now you have the name Petra, but nothing of the original group. And I want to be very careful because this isn't a dig at all at John Schlitt. I'm not questioning whether he deserves legacy. He totally deserves his legacy. And he totally deserves his mark as a leader of this band and a leader of the ministry for the years that he did. But, you know, he's not a founder. And I wonder, and this is kind of a reflection, not just of Double Take, but it's a reflection of God Fixation. And it's a reflection, you know, that we've kind of been sliding into ever since, no doubt. It's like, what is that effect? Like, is it the thing you love when most of what you loved is not really there anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good reflection. I think, you know, it's interesting because as we've been on this journey, this last couple of albums, we've seen some significant changes and you know, we've examined some of the differences and the feel changes. I find it interesting that this is probably the one album that Bob has probably no influence over. If we to carry on with your point. In God Fixation, he was writing, and I guess because he was writing, he would have, and the production element tied to the writing would have been, well, this is what the song should feel like, or this is what the melody is going to be like. So a lot of the foundation of the song is still elements of Bob, and I think you can hear that in God Fixation, but in this album, it's the new guys bringing a new sound and a new feel and a new approach and a new direction. And yeah, it feels like, I think what you've said is probably the thing. This album feels like it's lacking the heart of Petra. And not the heart of the ministry, not the desire, not what they were hoping to achieve as a ministry, but the heartbeat of the band doesn't seem to be there for this album. And that's, I think, because Bob wasn't involved.
And I agree. And I think it's that hard thing you talk about when you get to creative enterprise. I mean, there is business element that has to be considered in music and in a band. And there is, you know, just pragmatic marketing, you know, matters that need to be affronted. And you can, you know, you can get a whole bunch of people and just pay them to be involved in an album and call it a band, and they'll take the pay and they might not care about the songs. I'm not saying that's what anyone is doing here. I'm just saying that what makes great bands and great musicians stand out is that in among, even though there is that business element to it all, there's a genuine heart for the creative pursuit itself. You know, it's a cliche to say it's about the music, man, but it's about the music, man. You know, John Schlitt was clearly super passionate about the ministry. I feel I really get that sense of like, that was what was, yes, of course he still is, but that's actually the most important thing. That's what's driving. His voice and his, you know, participation in music is a means to the ministry. But you can't just unplug the key creative driver from a creative ministry. You can't just do that. I just think fundamentally that's not going to work.
And I think this circles us back to where we were at the beginning of the episode, of this episode, where we talked about the fact that this album did not have a great deal of concerts associated with it. There was minimal concerts, minimal touring. That it was the bottoming out of the impact of the ministry. And I think as much as John was probably trying to drive and get the heart for it, there was the something missing was being felt at a wider scale. And I guess, you know, we're going to be able to touch on that a bit more over the next couple of episodes, because there is a marked turnaround. I truly believe there's a marked turnaround, but it's about the, and it shows that when you take that, when you bring that change, it has an impact on the way it's received. I mean, we go back to this other album we've been talking about this episode, Never Say Dinosaur. And one of the fundamental things about that album, excuse me, listeners, is the fact that that album is different bands paying tribute to a ministry that's had an effect on them, to a ministry that has, whether it been possibly brought them to Christ, grown them in their walk with Christ, or maybe been a foundational reason for why they wanted to be in Christian music. You have a bunch of bands bringing their heartbeat of style and adopting a Petra song.
Yeah, they're bringing the song into their fold and imbuing it with their own spirit, if you will.
Yeah, and we've touched on a couple of the songs already. We touched on a few of the songs already, but I mean there are other songs on that album that are just like, you know, this isn't a review or we're not doing a deep dive into that album, but there are some songs on there. Like, you've got bands that are doing songs from the early stages of the ministry. Like, there's a Audio Adrenaline do a version of Taste and See. It's awesome.
Yeah,
it is absolutely fantastic.
And if you're an Audio Adrenaline fan, it's totally in line with an Audio Adrenaline song. But the little thing for me there, I hadn't heard Washes Whiter then. Prior to me, I heard Never Say Dinosaur first. So my first introduction to Washes Whiter then was actually Audio Adrenaline's Taste and See. And for a while, I was kind of the thing of, where do I fall? Which one's better? Which do I prefer? And, you know, in my older age now, I'm like, okay, no, I'm settling on the classic rock. I love Petra. But Audio Adrenaline acquit themselves quite admirably.
Oh, they do. They do. Sarah Jane do a version of Yahweh Love that it's a little bit different, but it's still got that feel in the heart of the song, and it's an enjoyable version.
Hers is gorgeous. That's just such a perfect marriage of her vocal styling to the feel of that song. It's great.
You know, some of these songs that they're covers. They almost keep a lot of the elements. The original Galactic Cowboys do Not of This World, and they do this massive, almost metal style intro, and then we back it off to basically what is the Not of This World song from the Petra album,
yeah.
And then we go back into this metal bit.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I misattributed earlier the Galactic Cowboys to All the King's Horses. My apologies for that. Plank Eye were everywhere around that era, so I really should have known better.
You know, there's a version, MXPX do a version of I Could Be Friends With You. My goodness, that goes. I mean,
get arrested.
In fact, I'll go as far as to say the MXPX version might be slightly better than the original version of I Can Be Friends With You.
I remember you saying that. It's so different, and it's so in keeping with that. There are so few legitimate punk bands that ever like were sort of fringing on Christianity. You know, and it's sad to say that MXPX, at least, you know, their founders don't really seem interested anymore. But for a while there, they were a hardcore, dyed-in-the-wool punk band, and everything that that means. Punk's not just a sound. Punk is a state of mind. It's a statement about the world. And it's awesome that in that, there was a group that was like, we're touching on, we love Jesus. We like Jesus. I love that energy, and it's a good energy to marry with the song, and that cheeky sense of, well, we're a punk band. We're going to take one of the sweet sounding, nice little teeny bopper songs, and we're going to murder it in a way that makes everybody happy. All right. So I'm always curious about this one, Dave. In amongst these tributes, these cover songs, you get one original work.
Mm-hmm.
You get one original work, which is it's part audio mixing, it's part, you know, DJing, remixing old audio of Petra. Very, very notably, Louis' drum solo from Captured in Time and Space. It's part poetry. It's part reflection on the Odyssey by Homer. You know, I talking about Louis' solo, Dave. Have you ever had much time for that song?
That's the second drawback of this album. I actually ranked this song higher than the coloring song that we talked about earlier in this episode. But this is this to me is a bit of a miss. It's almost like the message is about, like, it's this idea of we're going into battle and all the people are marching into battle and all that, and they're marching to the beat of Louis' solo. Well, they could have marched to the beat of anyone. They could have marched to the beat of, you know, of any drummer in history. It's not a tribute to Louis.
It's odd. I can see what they were going for. The opening lines of this song are, "Do you doubt the truth in the tale of brave Ulysses? I was there beside him, though humble in my task." And that's kind of the key there. I was beside the hero. I'm not the hero, But I have traveled with the hero from the very beginning or near the beginning, and I can testify to his bravery and awesome stuff. And I have been a faithful servant along the way. And it's that idea of saying the journey, the odyssey, is made possible through the faithful service of people like me marching along to the beat of Louis Solo. Louis is a guy who never got, who never gets the huge credit in the band. That's an arguable point.
Very arguable, because I think there's a lot of people who give him credit. And I think we're going to touch on this in two albums' time when...
Yes, we are.
When Louis's not there, and just what an impact it had on a lot of people. So, right. Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that idea.
Like, look, Kevin Maxwell Smith, as he was going at the time, but these days just Kevin Max, he's a hipster. He's never just going to do the straightforward thank you for being an inspiring figure in my walk with Jesus, Louis Weaver. I appreciate you. When he can say, you know, there's a correlation to be made with classic Greek literature, and we're going to merge together multiple genre stylings and create a tribute within the he's a hipster. He's the Jared Leto of the Christian music scene.
Well, I guess we've got to give him a little bit of leeway. This was probably the timing of this. This is probably his first ever solo activity outside of DC Talk, because at the time the album was released, I'm pretty certain DC Talk, it was before DC Talk had ended.
I think this was before. For Supernatural.
Right. So it's before, yeah. So it's before the end of the band, before the end of DC Talk. So this is most likely his first ever solo effort thing outside of DC Talk. Because the solo stuff that DC Talk did, the last album they did, the solo thing was after Supernatural. So it was sort of the cap on what they on their legacy as a group. So yeah, I mean it's his first foray, his first opportunity to do something different. There it is. So, but I mean, look, overall, it's a good out. If you haven't heard Never Say Dinosaur, get your hands on it. I don't know if it's on Spotify. I don't know that I've seen it on Spotify.
No, I don't.
A lot of streaming services may not have it. But if you can find a copy of it on CD, if you've got a copy of it, pop it in, listen to it. It's a good listen, and you'll enjoy it.
But the final highlight there, I always want to shout this one out. Sixpence None the Richer, who had hit it pretty big as a mainstream band, which is I love that they got involved in this album. They do a cover of Road to Zion. It's pretty haunting, and it's really something, and it's a real sweet special thing. So, but yeah, I think as a testament to legacy, Never Say Dinosaur is a better glimpse into the impact of the band, because you see it spread out across these different bands and their different styles. And how they're adapted in different ways, and a couple of them don't work, but you know, it's a fun ride, that one.
It's the dichotomy. A couple of the songs don't work, but most of them do. And we've just reviewed an album where a couple of the songs do work, but most of them don't. And it's an interesting balance. And I guess, yeah, it brings us again back full circle, back to Double Take, and as we finish it off. We come to our lists. We do this every episode. I don't think there's going to be much conversation going on here. We've already covered the cover. Where does this one rank in terms of the album rate? Does it sit at the bottom? I mean, I don't think this is a better album than God Fixation. And we put God Fixation at the bottom last episode.
This forms the bedrock for Petra in that regard.
Okay. Yeah. So I just, yeah, it's just, unfortunately, for all we shared tonight, it's just, it's not there.
Yeah.
No song.
No,
is good enough to break the top 25.
I don't think the two new songs really got it. As I say, like, they're fine in and of themselves, but works.
Yeah, and talking about the new songs, we've got our non-Bob list, and we didn't really slot them in to where we would have them, you know. Where do they? I mean, again, I'm going to throw out a couple of songs. You tell me where you think they hit, if they hit higher, and I'm going to sort of jump at the bottom end and tell me if you have it above or below. But a song like Occupy, we've got two songs. We've got.
I listen to Occupy.
Song of Moses of Petra Praise 2. I prefer that.
I think I'm doing Song of Moses.
Yeah, Magic Words from Washes Whiter then?
Yep, still above.
Over the Horizon?
Yep.
Without You, I Would Surely Die. We're right back in the beginning stages of the band now.
Yeah, and I'm still, yeah.
Wake Up?
Yep.
Here we go. I reckon we can almost put them both in at this point, because now we've got Sally.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
I think. So which one gets ranked higher?
I would rank Breathe higher than The Longing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, do you feel the same way?
I probably prefer listening to The Longing, but I think Breathe has a bit of message. So I'm happy to have Breathe sit up first. So there you go, guys. And no real impact from this album, but
unfortunately,
you know, we've talked about what feels like a missing heartbeat, like the depth of the band has been missing, and next episode, I think we're gonna get a revival in more ways than one, because there is some restoration that comes. You know, Double Take is a major. It's like a returning point. Where we go to from here is the next album, and we'll cover this in more depth. But there really is a revival for the band.
Okay, so. Full disclosure, I have never sat and listened to this album.
Oh.
Never. I have, the only times I've ever heard it is when you, or when hanging out with you, and you've had it on in the background. But never listened to
this album. This will be a very interesting, episode, next episode, because we'll get a first take look at the album as well. So. It'd be interesting to see if what I've put out there, that it's a bit of a revival for the band, the beginning of a process, whether that's a reflection that you feel listening to the album in its entirety for the first time. So, but as always, we would love to hear from all of you listeners. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Double Take. Have we doubled down too hard? Have we doubled over too much? Is it something that you feel we've been too harsh? As you said, are there people out there who are sitting there going, now this is up there with one of the best ones? And what are your thoughts on some of the ideas we've put forward about Bob not really being a part of this album, and is that what is the missing piece? And it'd be good to hear. We'd love to hear from everyone. How can everyone reach out to us again, Lindsay?
Well, you can always find us on Facebook, on Rock, A Petrospective. Has a page. That's where we get most of our word out. Interact with us. Leave us a message there. Post on our Facebook page. Or if you want to go a little more old school, you can send us an email at wemeanrock@gmail.com. We do love to hear from you guys. Thank you for your continued support in this journey. Apologies for the delay in this particular episode. We've been battling all kinds of technological issues. We hope that you enjoy it. We look forward to quick eternal.
We'll have a revival a bit quicker.
So, from On Rock Petrospective, I'm Lindsay Orr.
And I'm Dave Orr.
Take care.